Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
We're live here with our insider from the insiders, our man James Hamm. Before we dive into this conversation about the Sacramento Kings practice today, the media availability, all of that good stuff, head over to ESPN1320.com. Click on the Nothing But Net giveaway and enter the keyword basket. That's a shoot. Enter the keyword basket right now over at ESPN1320.com for your chance to win a $500 gift card. We give away a gift card a day. We'll announce the winner to today's contest. Tomorrow we'll have two opportunities for you to get keywords to enter over there at ESPN1320.com. Once with James and Kyle at 11 o'clock, and then once with D'Lo and KC here at 3 o'clock. Two opportunities every single day for your chance to win that $500 gift card. So again, enter the word basket over at ESPN1320.com. Hammer, what was the vibe following practice today?
I think the vibe is, let's get this thing going. You know, like, we've been here before. We know this team. They know us. Let's go do this thing. There's no time to think about it too much. It's a huge game. Everyone knows that. It's a team that knows the other team really well. It's going to come down to physicality and to shots. And the Kings looked ready. They look prepared. They look like they're upbeat, and like, this is a matchup that they kind of sense was coming, and they're okay with it.
Is there, in your opinion, like, hearing how they talked yesterday post game, and then maybe talking to them for practice, is there, I don't know if relief is the right word, but are they rejuvenated by getting to the postseason? Obviously, they're not in the playoffs replay series, but they're out of the regular season, and they're in this Matrix-like arena where the stats don't count, all this other stuff. But they're done with the regular season, and now it's, you know, postseason time. Is there – it seemed like, hearing some of the quotes, there's a little bit of a spark, a little bit jolt of energy to get to that point that might be going through that locker room.
Yeah, I would say that they've had a little bit of time to process the disappointment of where they ended up, right? And I know a lot of people out there, they're so frustrated with how this season's gone. But look, you know, this shouldn't be like the barometer for things, but this team showed up in the last 2-minute report like three of the last five games. Or at least they did, but they should have had, you know, calls that went against them in three of the last five. That means that you're close. That means that you didn't get blown out, that you didn't just get thumped by somebody. Most of the games they had big leads in, and I just think that this team doesn't feel like they're that far away. I know that, you know, like, the big boost that they could have gotten isn't coming. Malik Monk will not play in tomorrow's game against the Golden State Warriors. We know that now. Mike Brown told us that today, but that doesn't mean that like you have to feel like the despair. I think these are two teams that know each other well, but they also have come to the realization that who the Golden State Warriors were last year and who they were in game seven and who they were the first like 10 games of the season and who the Kings were in all those situations, those aren't who they are today. And, you know, the Warriors have finished the season really strong, and that's good for them. I mean, I think the second half of the season, they're on pace to win. Like they were on a 54 win pace if it would have been that the whole season. But of course that's not how basketball works. And the Kings, they're a team that, you know, again, they're a much different team. They're a better defensive team. They're better in a lot of aspects than they were every single time they played this Warriors team in the past. So I think this is going to be a lot of the same, but plenty of different between these two squads.
Well, what do you think is going to be different? Because the last time these two teams played, I think it was 134 to 133. The last three games have been, you know, each decided by a single point. But as you pointed out, the two teams are a little bit different than the last time they played back in January. The Warriors are playing at a different level. The Kings are playing at a different defensive level, certainly with a different defensive intensity. And of course, you have the absence of Malik and Kevin Huerter. So what do you think is going to be different for these two teams who know each other very, very well tomorrow night at the Golden 1 Center?
Yeah, I think if I'm looking at it from the Kings' point of view, I would say that the Kings are just much better defensively in the backcourt than they were before. And if we look at what happened last year in the playoffs and even what happened early in this season, the Kings had to rely so heavily on Keegan Murray to defend Steph Curry that it was ridiculous. I mean, it was like if Keegan got in foul trouble, the game was over. And we saw it during the playoffs where Keegan tried to defend Steph and got cooked a couple of times, especially when he went to the basket. And then we saw early in the season, well, that's just not the case anymore. Now, instead of having to use Keegan Murray on Steph Curry all the time, you can throw De'Aaron Fox. You can throw a Keon Ellis. You can throw a Davion Mitchell, who's playing so incredibly well at that one specific issue. And I think that that's the thing that people are looking at. Like, you know, the Warriors used to be able to beat you in so many different ways. And I think for the Kings, yes, you have to respect, you know, Klay Thompson for sure. And you've got to respect, you know, the legacy of a Draymond Green and even like the young and upcoming guy in Jonathan Kuminga. But the way that the Warriors beat the Kings is that Steph Curry just dominates you. And you want to have as many looks as possible that you can throw at a guy like that. And all of a sudden the Kings have that. Again, no Keon Ellis in most of the games that they've played against this team. And Davion Mitchell just was a non-factor for plenty of these times. His confidence level is different. Keon's confidence level is different. And so while you're missing some players, I do believe that the Kings might be better suited to play them right now than they were earlier in the season.
Mm. Yeah, and I was thinking the same thing. You laid it out perfectly. They've got four guys, in essence, they can go to guard Steph Curry. Once again, not saying anybody's stopping him or anything else like that, but four different looks. And really what's important about that too, Ham, especially when you talk about De'Aaron Fox, is time off of Steph Curry. You know what I mean? This is, since we've been starting the show, it's like, hey, they need to get De'Aaron somewhere where they can hide him a little bit, where he doesn't have to, we need you to score 35 and you got to guard Steph for 35 minutes or something like that. Like now he can kind of maneuver around, you know, maybe if Pods is out there or whoever is a guy that's, you know, a non scoring threat, he can be out there and Keon can, you know, take the minutes to guard Steph. Davion can, Keegan can, and they just kind of built a little different. I mean, with those two other guys for sure, Keegan and Davion, that's where replacing those two from having Monk and Huerter may help you in that respect, because Monk and Huerter would have been out there as options to guard Steph. That's not really idea. You got these guys out there now. that's going to bolster your chances to make it tough for him. I don't even know if you'll slow him down or what, but it'll make it tough for him.
Yeah, I totally agree. And not only that, but let's be honest, the Warriors in the past, what they've done is that they've allowed Davion to shoot. They've allowed, you know, other people to shoot, and they've tried to take away Domas. They try to take away De'Aaron. I think the Kings are kind of looking at this and going, hey, you know, if you want to dare Keon Ellis to beat you, Keon Ellis might beat you. Mm. Keon Ellis is a 42% three-point shooter, and we just saw a couple of games ago where Keon Ellis went into a night where, like, look, it was a high-pressure situation, and he went out and went 8 of 15 from 3. So for me, I think Keon is showing you something. I think Davion is showing you something. And then on the other side, I think there's going to be this weird dynamic that they have. They haven't been using Kevon Looney hardly at all for a while. And then everyone knows that this is a matchup, right? This is a matchup that everyone is worried about for the Kings. But I would tell you that the Warriors, their second half run and why they've been so good, a lot of it is Trayce Jackson-Davis and just how good he's been in the second half of his rookie season.
Mm-hmm.
If you can't count on him to defend Sabonis like Looney, and you've got to pull the plug on him quickly, it hurts them. Mm-hmm. They're not as dynamic without Trayce Jackson-Davis. They still have great shooters, and like Looney's been there forever. So I'm not going to say that there's not going to be like this seamless integration of Looney into their system. But Looney doesn't look like he's the same player he was last year at all. And Trayce Jackson-Davis adds this other element that the Kings really haven't had to stop when it comes to that team. And if you can get him in foul trouble early, if you can, if Sabonis can just go to work against him and come away with a bunch of early baskets, they're going to have to make quick changes and go to Looney. And what does that mean for the rest of their team? Like, you still got to worry Looney's going to dominate you on the glass. You got to still worry he's going to, you know, get a rebound and kick it out for a spray three. But I don't think that they are the same team with him on the court.
That was a moment in time last year. That's over. Sabonis worked Looney the four times they played this year. And like you said, James, Looney hasn't, and I like Looney as a ball player, but they're clearly better with Trayce in there.
Mm-hmm.
And like James just pointed out, though, can Trayce guard Sabonis the same way? If he can't, that's going to be that may change their game a little bit, or then maybe they got to go to Draymond a little earlier. Draymond might be in foul trouble, whatever the case may be. But the Looney monster.
But we know what Draymond going to do, and Domas has to make him pay for it. Like, Draymond's going to sag off of him.
Mm-hmm.
Domas has to make him pay for that, like, from the jump.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I agree, and like, look, they're integrating their young players and their older players. We don't know how their young players are going to play in the playoffs yet.
Mm.
And you can think all you want, oh, it's just another game. It's not. It's not just another game. And the fact that, you know, most of the players that we're talking about here have been through, you know, well, I mean, with the Warriors, they've been through hundreds of playoff games. And then you have these guys who have never been there, you know, Pajemski and Trayce Jackson-Davis, they've never been there. They don't know what this is. They don't know what a one game is, a one and done. And I'd also, like, look, I think that in a game like this, you worry about it being like a game seven, right? And where Steph is going to come out and do whatever Steph's going to do, and it's going to be, all right, can you stop him or whatever? The Kings played great defense on him multiple times in the series last year, and they played great defense overall. Right now, they're a much better defensive team than they were last year. Mm. I think that they're going to be okay. It's to me, it's just really going to come down to, does Ellis step into three or four three-pointers and make you pay? Does Davion come off the bench and give you 10 or 12 points? Does Trey Lyles show up and start bombing away? Like, how do these things, like, how do the secondary pieces for the Kings react to this situation? And if they react well, I think the Kings have a very good shot.
You mentioned Trey Hammer. We were speculating earlier that you got Trey, Davion, and Alex Lynn, and Mike might not much dig much further than that. You think we see a pretty tight rotation of eight, maybe nine guys, but I can't figure out who the ninth would be. I'm stuck on eight.
Yeah, basically, Mike said today, he said, hey, we're going eight deep to start with contingency plans that, you know, if we have to go nine or nine and a half deep, we already know who those players are. Yeah. No pause. Yeah. It is what it is.
I got it a little late.
No,
I
got it. Yeah. What I love though is that James is the ultimate professional, and he chuckled.
It was you.
I didn't do anything.
Dave.
I just got it late.
Yeah. Like Mike is willing to go like to a nine and a half man rotation. He is, but at the same time, he really hopes that he can trot out their eight guys. And that they lay it all out on the line, and you don't have, if you do win, you don't have a game for a couple of days. And, you know, I would expect, you know, we've seen this in the last 2 weeks, like De'Aaron Fox played 44 minutes in a back-to-back against the Celtics. He played well over 40 minutes in the back-to-back on Saturday or Friday against the Suns. Like Mike is going to rely heavily, heavily, heavily on his stars. And if Sabonis can stay out of foul trouble and Fox can stay out of foul trouble. And like, look, I think that's the other element. Like, what does foul trouble even mean at this point? Like the officials aren't calling anything. So if we get into a playoff series and they start dinging the Kings early for foul trouble, like the uproar is going to be outlandish. You know, you've got to call out the officials if that's the way this goes, because what you can't do is have a standard deviation from the norm in the playoffs every single year. Like once you get to the playoffs, the physicality and cranks up and the whistles go away. Well, the NBA did that 2 months ago. So what are we supposed to expect come like the opening day of the playoffs? Or is it just going to be like Draymond Green gets to throw elbows and slam people down? Does Sabonis get to run over everybody?
Well,
because as of right now, well, I
never
mean, but as of right
and
now,
he's
like,
never going to be able to set a screen.
No.
Yeah. If that's the thing, if you start calling him for moving screens, if you, I don't know. It to me, this is going to be crazy. Again, I expect Mike Brown and his group to start yelling for three in the key like they did. What was that game? It wasn't Dallas. It was it the Pelicans game? Or the Pelicans were just leaving a man in the key and Mike and his group of coaches just kept yelling. Or maybe it's OKC. That's who it was. It was OKC. Like, is that what we're going to see from the Warriors, or they just sag a man in the key and say, go ahead and beat us from the outside? And, you know, maybe that's what happens. But I'll tell you, if the Warriors dare the Kings to beat them from the outside and the Kings hit their shots, they can beat them from the outside. They can hit 25 threes in a game, and they could make this a lopsided game like very quickly.
It almost feels like that. We talked about it last week. Like that seems to be what they've leaned into as their key for success. Now, nobody wants to see 58 three-pointers.
The three-point shot?
Yeah. But, you know, I think they have an understanding within, you know, that locker room that, hey, we got to hit our three ball because, you know, they're going to get the open looks. A lot of the times that may be where they get their most open looks because the Warriors or anybody else are going to sag off Davion, going to sag off Keon, even going to sag off Harrison to give those looks. And, you know, they're going to be there. I would tell them they're going to be there for you. Those looks are going to be there for you. Get ready to shoot it. Get ready to knock it down.
Yeah, what I loved that we saw from Domas was, you know, like his just willingness to shoot against Portland. And maybe it was because it was Portland, and maybe it's because he doesn't want to go mix it up with Moses Brown, who literally, I think Moses Brown has like eight elbows. Like everywhere you turn, Moses Brown is hitting you with something. And you're like, what is happening? I think that Sabonis, like he started to show like, hey, here's my 16-foot jump shot. Here's my 18-foot jump shot. I can shoot it from the baseline. I can shoot from the top of the key. I'm like, where has this been all season? So I hope that Domas brings that to the game tomorrow. And I would say we asked Mike about that today, and he said that that's what he's been working with Doug like all off season and all through the season, is when and where to pull up and hit the jumper and to have confidence in it and to make sure that, you know, you're giving yourself and your team every opportunity to win by taking the right shots that will either space the floor or that will beat the other team in a different way. And, you know, again, if they're going to leave Sabonis open from the free throw line and he hits three or four in a row, they're going to have to change their defense, and they're going to have to start guarding him a different way. And then that's when the Kings can really get loose. So I'm intrigued to see how this all plays out. Again, this is, I think both teams are matchup issues for each other. Like, nobody has anything to stop Steph. Nobody has for the last, you know, 15 years in the league. But also the Warriors don't have anyone that can truly defend De'Aaron Fox, and they can get dirty and gritty with Sabonis, but he should be a player too that is almost unstoppable in a short series like this.
You talk about Steph, Hammer, you mentioned Keon, how big stepping into those threes could be for this team if they fall. Is Keon getting the Steph assignment to start tomorrow night's game?
I mean, I think you're going to do a little bit of matchup to matchup. I wouldn't be totally shocked to see Mike Brown start Keegan on Steph and then kind of play it by ear, like what you're doing at other positions. I think the Kings are perfectly fine if Kuminga is playing and Kuminga's starting, with trying to make him do his off the dribble stuff and having Fox guard him. I think, you know, again, Clay is the other guy that you have to really keep under wraps. If Clay's a guy that when he hits shots, it like breaks your soul. And because it happens so quick and you feel like there's nothing you can do about it. I would like to see Keon get some minutes there too, where, you know, just stick with the dude like glue. Don't let him run off screens. Don't let him get loose. Just stay with him. Again, I think Mike has all kinds of variables that he didn't have in the playoffs last year and that he didn't have, you know, in the first four matchups against his team this season.
One of the things that I look at with the Warriors, well, I looked at it with the Suns, and I wonder if the same thing applies to the Warriors, is we were talking about, you know, I was talking to people at the game, and I said, you know, the Kings, this is when we thought we could get 7 and 8. We're like, man, you kind of want to play the Warriors, because even though they have these great ball players with KD, Book, and Bill, they shoot a lot of jump shots. And I think that is, you know, it's feast or famine, right? Sometimes the jumper's going to be on, sometimes it's not. But they take these contested twos, and, you know, it gives you an opportunity if they're not hitting or if you can get good defense on them. I wonder if the Warriors are the same way. I know Kuminga gives them an element of being able to score in the paint a little bit more. But with Draymond and Jackson Davis, and even Looney to a certain degree, there's not a big offensive presence inside. And with the Kings now being able to do a better job of defending on the perimeter, I wonder if that plays a little bit more into the Kings, their strategy, with the Warriors being more of a jump shooting team in this game.
Yeah, I mean, let's be honest. So you're realistically looking at two jump shooting teams. So, I mean, yeah, I get you, but I think the key for the Warriors too is to turn the Kings into a jump shooting team. And I think the Warriors are perfectly fine with the Kings going out there and shooting 58 threes or whatever, because like, it's just tough to keep up if you're not hitting. You know, I would like to see the Kings rely on getting downhill, getting to the rim, while, you know, the Warriors are really, really good at keeping people away from the basket. They don't have a natural shot blocker. You got players like Fox that can rise up above people. You know, I'm intrigued. I'm intrigued to see how this matchup's going to look and who steps up and who doesn't, you know. And I also think that, you know, the Warriors are used to, you know, kind of feeling their way through a series. It's sort of who they've been forever. And this is just one game. It's like one game for everything. And it's not a game 7 where you sat here and gone back and forth and done a chess match with a team. It's all of a sudden you're facing one team for one night and you haven't seen them since January. And a lot of the pieces are different. And that's where I think that this game could just really hinge on who steps up and just says, I want this, and goes out there and takes it. and you have a team who, you know, again, has played really well in the second half of the season versus another one that has been good defensively but hasn't really particularly played that well. And it's just, it's going to come down to, you know, 48 minutes of basketball and who puts a better effort out there.
It's a win or go home game. There's obviously a ton of pressure on everyone out there in both uniforms. But given last year's first round playoff series, Hammer, is there perhaps an maybe unnecessary amount of pressure on Domantas Sabonis?
Yeah, I mean, I would say there is, just because, like, he shut off all social media and he's not listening to anything anymore. But I think he knows. I think he knows that if he played better, that they would have won that series last year. But I also, you know what, like, for as much pressure as you want to put on Domantas to have just a huge game, like, I also think that, you know, Harrison Barnes is waiting for his revenge and has been for years. And he had it lined up in game four last year and missed a wide open three. I want to see Harrison Barnes come out and play like he has the last couple of games. Just be aggressive. Just attack the rim. Just, like, don't let anybody off the hook, you know. And if we see that, I think that takes a lot of pressure off Domas as well. Like, it's got to be a team effort. And I'd say that for both of these teams. Like, Steph is great. De'Aaron's great. But at the same time, I think Steph has shown a propensity to not be the same player this year. And De'Aaron has had a season that's all over the place. Like, it's been a yo-yo season for him. So I kind of want to see, like, how everything shakes out in the end, who rises to the occasion, because I'm not going to put it on one player and whether, you know, and to be honest, like, Sabonis had like three great games in their seven game series last year. He had one game that was like pretty solid. And then he had two or three games that were not good, but you can't just act like they shut him down and he was a non-factor the whole series. He wasn't. I mean, he averaged over 16 points a game. He had a ton of rebounds, ton of assists. He just didn't look like himself. And I think that in this one, he's going to be highly motivated, just like everyone else in this series or this game.
Okay, we'll come back. Kenny will fire off whatever question was on the tip of his tongue right there before I cut him off. He's probably going to tell us that he saw Adrian Wojnarowski at the game on Saturday. That's about
No, I didn't.
He actually helped Drake write his verse, James, that dropped on Saturday. Hi, Drake.
That's me. Yeah, that's what I said. That's what I heard. That's what I'm saying. James Shams.
You get any insight for us, Hammer?
No, we probably said like five words.
I was going to say, did he speak at all?
No, he was on the phone most of the time.
Okay.
Or at least had his earbuds in listening to something else. He may have spoke, but maybe to Amick, but not really to me.
We'll come back. We'll talk more about the Sacramento Kings. Of course, the Kings and the Warriors win or go home tomorrow night at the Golden One Center. It's Thilo and Casey, brought to you by Sky River Casino here on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Obviously, a big day at the Golden One Center tomorrow, Kings versus Warriors. You know, we'll do a postmortem on the season when it's time. Our Kings are still alive right now with a chance in the play-in against the Warriors tomorrow, Hammer. But some accomplishments were kind of finalized yesterday. One of them is not surprising. Maybe one of them is. De'Aaron Fox led the NBA in steals. This is, and you know even better than I do, what like a manifestation this is for Doug Christie and how much he believed that De'Aaron Fox could be an elite defending guard in this league. What's it say about De'Aaron to finally get to this moment where it was obviously a goal for him? I think it was to average two steals per game, and the just over two steals wound up leading the league. This should be considered a big moment for De'Aaron Fox.
Yeah, I think it is a big moment for him. Like, I don't, he was a little snarky when asked if he thought he should be considered for all defensive team. He believes he should. he also said, like, how many guards in this league do you just like intentionally get into actions all the time because you know you can score on them? And he's like, it's like most of the point guards in the league. And he said, they don't do that with me. So like, look, I think that
he should be snarky. He's disrespected. Like, his game is disrespected, yeah. I think, in the league. He absolutely should be snarky about it.
Specifically in this conversation, yeah. His defense.
Absolutely.
Definitely disrespected.
No, I totally agree with you. Yeah. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, just like midway through the season, he decided that this was what he wanted to do. He wanted to get to two steals per game. And he almost like grinded. And then what I liked about like what we saw against Portland, he went to the basket and was fouled and yelled at the official, and the official gave him the like, hey man, like it's final game of the season, I'm not calling it. And he goes, oh, okay, fine. Then I'm going to go mug every single person out here and I'm going to take the ball from them every time they touch it. And that's what he did. I mean, he had one guy pinned in the corner and he stole the ball from like three times and the ball kept going back to him, but he kept taking it from him. And to me, that's what you want to see. You want to see the moment where, you know, angry Fox on the offensive end is great. You know, he starts attacking the rim. He starts doing his little spin move. He just like starts to put on a show. But angry Fox on the defensive end has so much potential for greatness. And, you know, he's long, he's athletic. He's one of the quickest dudes in the league. I mean, he's not only is he fast, right? There's one thing to sprint from one side to the court to the other and be like super fast. It's a whole other thing to have the quickness that he has, the quick bursts that he has, to be able to close space like he can. And so I think he's done a great job. It's not just the steals that he's had this season. He's also like in the top three in deflections. Mm-hmm. If you're honestly going to give him a fair shake and look at the metrics, Fox deserves to be like very, very closely considered for all NBA defensive team. But saying that, you start like looking around and, you know, we all know that, you know, like Alex Caruso has this reputation. Shea's got this reputation. You got Rudy Gobert, you got Victor Wembanyama that are both going to be all defensive team. You got Kawhi Leonard, and you just keep going and going and going. And there are all these players, the Lou Dorts of the world. And you start to come up with this picture of like, okay, it's 10 guys and it's really not very easy to make it into that elite group. I mean, Anthony Davis is probably going to be an all NBA defender. You might get even still a LeBron James that makes one of those lists. So, you know, when we start hitting 8 to 10 guys, you start, you know, are we going to leave out Giannis Antetokounmpo? And all of a sudden it's like, okay, well, maybe Fox won't make it. So I don't know. It's going to be tough. But I certainly think if you lead the league in steals 1 year, and then he also said today, like, this has got to be like the standard, that like two steals per game is something he had talked to Doug about, because Doug had done that, I think, like four times in his career, including, I think, one season he averaged like a 2.4 per game, which is just crazy. But either way, it's a good thing. It's a good thing to see him track it down. Oh, yeah. Someone mentions Drew Holiday, but not just Drew Holiday. Derek White is going to get a bunch of you know, possibility for a defensive, all defensive team playing for Boston, and just how good their defense has been. So it's just going to be really, really tough for him to be in that. But I think he'll be close. I think he'll be mentioned. It's just whether or not he gets there. And then, you know, Mike Brown said today, like, look, we're just unlocking him. He's just understanding how good he can be on the defensive end. And there's a whole other level he can get to. And we're waiting to see when he can get to that level. And we're just starting to see like the taste of how that will look when, you know, if he just like decides that that's going to be his motivation to be like an all defensive player and a great defender on a nightly basis.
The thing that's frustrating about that though, is, you know, when they don't want to put somebody like De'Aaron Fox on, they point to certain metrics. And because I remember I had all these conversations in the middle of the season when I was like, he's one of the best, if not the best defensive point guard in the game. And, you know, they came with all these metrics for SGA with deflections and steals and all this other stuff. And then De'Aaron reaches all those benchmarks. And then it's like, well, you know, you just know because Drew is Drew. We're like, well, wait a minute, what? Like, what are we talking about? So when it's just, you know, using your eyes and seeing, that's not good enough. So they bring the numbers. When you bring the numbers to go along with what your eyes are seeing, then it's just reputation. It's just, I just, everything you're saying is right, Ham, about how they already got preconceived notions for some of these guys, but. It's just baffling how they get to that point sometimes.
No, I get what you're saying, but I also think that, you know, everybody wants, like, they want their players to be recognized. And if he doesn't make an all-defensive team, that doesn't mean that he's not a really, really good defender, that he's not, you know, top 30, top 40 defender in the NBA. I mean, like, would you take him as a defender over Herb Jones? You know, like there are so many other players that we aren't thinking about that are such defensive specialists that's who they are and what they do. Now, I think Fox would get a little bit of a bump because of his offensive production as well. And let's be honest, somehow, lo and behold, we get to the end of the season and the Kings are 14th in the NBA in defensive rating. Like that's where they finished. And to me, that's a crazy stat too. So maybe Fox will get some consideration because they're going to look around and say, okay, how did you get to that? Because we didn't see that one coming at all. And, you know, this is a team that was, what, 25th in defensive rating last year. And for them to finish the season, even the post-All-Star break, the Kings were 9th in the league in defensive rating at 110.9. Like, they really, really figured it out. And this is what Mike's been waiting for. It's the moment where you become a defensive team and then you get to the playoffs and you're already at a certain level and all you have to do is turn it up a little bit to get to an elite level. And I think that that's what everybody like around the coaching staff and stuff wants to see is like, this is kind of what we've been talking about the whole season. Like, let's get to the playoffs where the defense means everything and let's show off what we've been working on and how good we are defensively. And then see, you know, if we can get the shots to fall, we got a shot.
I mean, you said the Kings finished the season 14th in defensive rating? And they finished two games worse than they did last year in the win column. What's that balance out to? Because we always said, and Jill Adge coined the phrase, dude, just be average. Don't be historically bad. Just be it. We're not even asking you to be good. Just be average. They were a smidge bit above average, but finished two games worse. Does that say anything at all?
Well, I mean, like, look, we're going to compare them to last season's team. That's tough because, number one, the league was different last year, right? I think that there is something to the fact that the league is mandated that these guys play basketball, that if they're going to make all NBA or whatever, they're going to register, like they've got to be out there playing. And so that's changed the dynamic of the season greatly. I mean, who knew that Kawhi Leonard would play like 72 games or 74 games or whatever it is. Like, and there's a bunch of players around the league that don't typically play and all of a sudden they are. So I think that's one aspect of it. I don't know. The West is just, it's really good. And there's a couple of teams that took monstrous leaps that you didn't think they would take these types of leaps. But when you look at players like, you know, Ant-Man, and you look at players like Chet Holmgren walking in the door and being like a defensive menace, like they changed the dynamic of the league totally this year. You look at Kyrie and Luka figure out how to play together out of nowhere. and they go from a team who doesn't make the playoffs to a playoff team. And I'm bringing all of these up because, like, look, in order to win 48 games, you're playing these teams. Like, the team the Kings played, what was the stat against more 500? They played more 500 games against 500 teams than anyone in the league. Mm-hmm. And that's because, number one, they play in the West, but it's also, number two, they played, you know, New Orleans five times, where, and the same thing with the Suns. They played both those teams five times. And, you know, you look at some of their competition. I think the Warriors only played New Orleans three times this season. And so you're getting all of these games where the Kings really did have a difficult schedule. And look, you took a step back. You did it, like, in certain ways, you took a step back, especially on the offensive end. I don't think, like, again, we'll talk about, like, the postmortem of this season once it's all over. Mm-hmm. But you had guys that, you know, last year had career years who didn't this year. Guy like Kevin Huerter went from 15 points to 10. He had guys like Harrison Barnes who went from, again, 15 points per game to 12. And then you had other guys who took a big leap in production and productivity, and that's not always easy either. So I think at the end of the day, it's going to be like a lot of little things like we can point to as to why they didn't match last season. But I would also tell you that, like, just in the last 3 weeks, they easily could have won four additional games. And not having Malik Monk plays into that. But also, if they won two of those, they would have matched last year's total. So there's not a lot of difference between 48 and 46. I just think that if we're talking about the mantra of maintain and improve, I feel like they maintained sort of, and then they did not improve this season. And that's where you have to readjust and address whatever the weaknesses are in the offseason.
Say they lose tomorrow, or it doesn't matter. They don't make the playoffs. How do you view this season? Is it? We've talked about how Mike Brown has been trying to hammer home this has been a learning experience a lot in the last couple weeks or so. Is it a failure of a season, or you just didn't reach your goal but you learned from it? Like, how would you look at this season if they don't make the playoffs?
I think this is a season that showed you the pathway forward, and I think last season, for whatever reason, there's a certain amount of smoke and mirrors that went into last year. And, like, do I think they were a really good team? Yes, I do. But you guys, we got into this discussion late in the season last year, and I kept telling you guys 48 wins is not typically a number three seed in the West, right? It's just not. And look at this season, what 48 wins. It's close, but, like, the three seed in this year's like 54 wins, 55. Like, that's typically where you're at. I don't know. I don't want to call this season. This is what you have to address. And whether you can address it or not is going to come down to a whole bunch of variables. Whether you can find a taker for some of these players that you're offering up, whether or not you have your first round pick or not, or whether you've got your 25, 26, 27 tied up. Like, that's going to be a part of this discussion. Like, there's all kinds of variables, but I don't think this season, in a nutshell, I would have liked to have seen them play better and to have more continuity and to figure things out quicker and all that. But I also don't think that this is like a failure season. I mean, you just, in one season, you went from 30 to 48 wins. And I think a little bit of that at the end of the day, we're now learning, like, it wasn't a natural jump. And the fact that they're able to back that season up with a season that's reasonably similar, whether they make it to the postseason or not, to me, it still shows that they're on a pathway. Now you make the adjustments to get you to the next step. And it's not going to come from within. It's going to have to come from the outside. You're going to have to mix this roster up. There is no running it back a third time. That's just not going to fly.
I'm calling cap on a lot of this. We need to decide whether we're giving the Kings credit for what they did last year or not. Because we talk about, and this has been discussed a lot, 48 wins wouldn't, you know, that wasn't going to do it. Like, that's an anomaly. 48 wins in the third seed is crazy. You got Phoenix finishing in the sixth spot with 49 wins. That's all fine. But it's also, we always talk about how the Kings took the last week of the season off. Whatever, three games right there. You win two of those, all of a sudden you're a 50-win team. Are we talking about this team differently if they just run through the tape and win 50 or 51 games? Because I don't think Minnesota finishing with 56 wins as the third seed is normal. You had three teams all potentially being the number one seed going into the last day of the season, finishing with 57 and 56 wins. New York took the second seed in the Eastern Conference on the last day of the season with 50 wins. I think when you're talking 51, 52, that you can talk about in the two and the three seed. But we're either going to give the Kings credit for what they did last year or we're not. And I feel like we've walked that line with giving them credit. Oh, it's not natural. Oh, it's this or oh, it's that. They were either a much better basketball team last year or they weren't. One or the other. And to me, they were. They did take the last week of the season off, so to speak. Like, they didn't run through the tape. They had that third seed locked in, and they just kind of were on cruise control. Running it back didn't work. I didn't expect Oklahoma. I knew Oklahoma City was going to jump. I didn't think they were going to jump like this. Hammer, I think this is a plus. It's a plus 17 on the last year. And that's not a 30-win team. That was a 40-win team that went plus 17. You saw the growth in Minnesota, and of course the defending champions are right there. But we've got to. I don't think some of us can make up our mind on whether we believe the Sacramento Kings are a good basketball team or not.
Oh no, I think they're a good team, and I think they're a good team last year. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that, like, that leap that they took, like, it's tough to make that leap. You're watching Major League Baseball, and a guy is a 15 to 18 home run guy for his career. And then one season he busts out and he hits 48 homers. Everyone around the league is number one wondering what's the steroid era, James. Yes. But then the next season when he comes back down and he hits 35, I think everyone becomes a lot more comfortable with the fact that he adjusted, he got stronger, he did something, and he didn't hit 48 again. But he hit 35, and it shows you, okay, he's a true power hitter. And I think when it comes to the Kings, I kind of look at them the same way. Like, the 48-win team is, like, spectacular. Like, that leap is spectacular, and everything they did, I'm not questioning who they were or what they were, anything else. Their offense was spectacular. But that doesn't change the fact that, like, doing it a second year isn't as easy. And there are variables. And, you know, we all here in Sacramento want to, flip off the national media when they start talking about, well, the Kings didn't have injuries last year and now, and that's why they were so good. That's not why they were so good, but it was a contributing factor in how many wins they had. Mm-hmm. It was like, it is a contributing factor when you have your starting five for almost every game the entire season versus when you don't. And like, you shouldn't take anything away from a team, but then when you get to the next season and Trey Lyles plays 54 games and Kevin Huerter sits after 64 and Malik Monk misses 10 games. And you start adding all these games up that they've lost, but to a very tight rotation, to like an 8.5-9 man rotation, that's a lot to take on. And so like, look, but we can't again say that, oh, injuries played a role in why they didn't win 50. Like, injuries fully played a role in why they didn't win 50 games this season. Mm-hmm. If they were 100% healthy all season long, you don't think that between all the games that Trey Lyles missed, the games that De'Aaron Fox missed in the first week of the season, the games that Ben Huerter and Monk missed, that this team wouldn't have picked up four more wins along the way? Mm. I have a tough time saying that. So at the same time, I can't just like look at last year's schedule and say, hey, you won 48 games and you had no injuries. So there is some give and take, Dame, and I'm not saying that they were a bad team last year. I think they're a really good team last year. I also think they're a good team this year. I just don't think they're quite as good. They're quite as fluid. And I also don't think that they handle expectations or growing pains very well.
Maybe it's a dog whistle, and I hear it because I'm sensitive to being here and covering the team. But didn't Steph miss a ton of time last year?
Did he get? Was that last year when he got hurt, or the year before?
I feel like Steph
was 20-some games.
Like Steph was injured last year, and that's part of the reason. Because I think you and I thought Golden State would be closer to the 50 win. Yeah. So you know how many games they won last year?
44.
They won 44 games. That's two less than this year. That means that 44 is good for the 11th spot in the Western Conference. I don't hear Brian Windhorst bringing that up. Like, we pick and choose because it's Sacramento. I get they got title pedigree and all of that. But what they did in 2021 or whatever the last year they won a title, but they ain't got nothing to do with right now. If you're going to find a storyline for the league, find it works for everybody in the conference. You're just choosing to focus on Sacramento. And like I said, it's probably a dog whistle, and that's why I hear it.
Yeah. Well, Steph played 56 games last year. Wiggins only played 37. You remember he disappeared due to the illness of his father for a huge stretch of the season. And again, I think part of
came back for the playoffs season, though. So thanks Wiggins. Thanks for that.
Well. Yeah. Yeah. Right. But again, look at the Warriors' health this season. 74 games for Steph, 77 for Clay. Wiggins plays 71. Pajemski plays 74. 74 for Kuminga.
And won two more games. All of that. And then won two more games.
Yeah. Tough.
One other thing I wanted to mention before we go, because we brought up Fox leading the league in steals. Domas, again, leading the league in rebounds, James.
Not only rebounds, but double-doubles and triple-doubles. Mm. Like, he led the league in all of these categories. And he was 6th or 7th in the league in assists per game at 8.2. Like he's probably going to be third-team All-NBA. But, you know, he's one of the most impactful players in the league. And if you're third-team in All-NBA, like, I'm not going to like get angry at voters if, as long as he's all NBA, as opposed to him not making the All-Star team. But I mean, you're third team all NBA. That means you're considered one of the top 15 players in the league. Yeah. And that's pretty good. And I do believe he fits into that category. What he was able to do, how I feel bad for him because like there's a stretch late in the season where everything is on the line and you lose Malik Monk and this opportunity feels like it kind of like took a bad turn for the Kings. But I still think that like Sabonis's season shouldn't be ignored. He was absolutely tremendous from start to finish. And hey, so was Fox. Fox averaged what, 26.6, like highest point per game total in his career. His 3-point percentage was way higher than any point in his career outside of the one aberration year. And then he leads the league in steals. Like, these guys did really, really good work. They just couldn't, they weren't as consistent as they were the year before.
Real quick, what Fox did, 25 points and lead the league in steals. I think 6 people have done it in the history of the league.
Mm.
And they're all Hall of Famers.
Mm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Deion
yeah,
Fox
but he was also
the Hall of Fame. You already
he was number 9 in the league in scoring at the All-Star break, and the top 19 players in scoring got in except for him. Mm. So,
amazing. Yeah. Absolutely tough. Amazing. We running it back next, Jesse. Yeah, you want more Kings talk, man? That's what we'll do. We'll run it back. Kenny and I are going to head over to 102.5. Make sure we got a lot going on over there today. Make sure you're tapped in with the insiders tomorrow beginning at 10 a.m. And make sure you're tapped in with a morning roast at 8:30.
And yeah, man.
Boy Guru at 11:30. And here we go again.
Let's do it. Let's get it, baby.
Kings and the Warriors tomorrow night at the Golden 1 Center, and we'll get you ready for it here. With the insiders and D'Lo and Casey on Sacramento Sports Leader ESPN 1320.
Happy Jackie Robinson Day.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, O'Reilly Auto Parts.